Hi, and welcome to another riveting episode of the Harvest Podcast with me, Carmel Fisher. Without further ado, I am super excited to speak today to a CEO and founder of Curate Capital. I'm speaking of Miss Carrie Colbert herself, leading the charge for investing in businesses by women for women. Carrie, welcome. Really excited to hear more from you today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. I just introduced you as the CEO and founder of Curate Capital. Just give us a brief background to how you started. Very intriguingly, it did start in the petroleum industry, from engineering in that field to venture capital. Tell us more about how any of your experience in that previous industry of the petroleum engineering somehow prepared you for what you're doing now, and was it a natural progression or tell us more. Just bring us up to speed with where you are now.
Absolutely. My path to venture capital was anything but conventional. My early career decisions were just all very pragmatic and practical in nature. I was the first in my family to go to college. And so what I studied was dictated by where I got the best scholarships. And so that was in petroleum engineering. And so then the jobs were here in Houston, Texas. And so I worked in that industry for almost 20 years. And while I was never super passionate about the industry, I had a very successful career. And it was really pivotal for me that I spent most of that career working for a company that's very entrepreneurial. So even though in general the industry is very, old school, this particular company that I worked for called Hilcorp Energy just really ran itself in a very entrepreneurial way. And I had the privilege of working directly for the founder. And while I was there, we scaled the company from less than 100 million in value to billions in value. And so they're now the largest privately held company of its kind. And so I learned many great lessons there. And so that's where I got the entrepreneurial bug. And part of that entrepreneurial culture was having some level of ownership in the company. So since I was there during such a great time of growth, that really afforded me the luxury of stepping away from that career and figuring out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. It's just the basic business acumen, thinking logically and data-driven analysis, from my engineering and finance background, or the entrepreneurial lessons I learned working for that company, those all carry over to what I do today. I just now get to do it in an industry that is, to me personally, more fun and enjoyable. So, yeah, it was a circuitous path to getting here. But in between that, I also happened to be on social media in the early days and became, by accident, a kind of small scale influencer. And so that's how I started connecting with brands that I liked. And I very naively would just offer up, hey, if you're looking for investors, I'd love to invest. Or if you're looking for board members or advisors. And so that's really how I started investing in the space with my own money. And so I did that for about a period of 5 years. And during that 5 years, really saw, wow, there are incredible opportunities and more than I could personally do. So again, then I took the next leap, very naively, but thankfully a good one, to start a venture capital fund. So I had what's most important in venture capital, and that's deal flow, right? The opportunities to invest in. But I had a lot to learn about some of the other parts of the business for sure.
Incredible, and definitely a path of its own. Nothing too predictable there, and that's what keeps it exciting, I think. I love the nuances of taking the finance and all the expertise that you've gained, and then just putting it to something that you really love and falling
Yeah.
upon this industry. But there's a very specific focus on women, which of course I'm going to love. But what specific gaps or challenges did you identify that told you, hey, Carrie, this is going to be the focus. I'm just going to filter everything out because women need my support more profoundly. Yeah.
Absolutely. So when I got into the space, I was floored by the stats. In fact, in the US, still less than 2% of venture capital dollars go to female founders. And so that's just incredible considering, that women do start almost half the businesses in this country. And so, we could go down a rabbit hole of why that is, but I saw that. But yet, study after study shows that women over-deliver results. They provide better returns to their investors, And so there's really an opportunity to make a lot of money, right? And make a social impact as well. So, first it just makes good business sense, but then also we are making a strong impact, in the lives of these founders and, everyone in our ecosystem. So That was really why I started looking into female founders. And then specifically, we at Qurate, particularly with our second fund coming up, are very keen on the consumer space. And many VC investors have really eschewed the consumer space, in favor of, deep tech or AI or whatever the next fancy thing is. But we firmly believe that there's still a lot of good money to be made here backing these consumer brands. So at Qurate Capital, we invest in extraordinary women who are building the products, services, and technology that she wishes existed for herself, her family, her home, and her life. And so, the stat shows that women control over 80% of household spending. So we really believe that women are creating those products that they wish they had for themselves. So we are all in on the consumer space. That's about 80 to 85% of what we invest in. But then we still leave ourselves open to other innovative founders who are really just compelling because they're so extraordinary and they're solving such a pain point for women. For example, I am certainly no medical expert, but in our first fund, we invested in this company called Intuitap, in which they've created a stud finder for the spine to make getting epidurals easier. So they are literally solving a pain point that so many women experience. And the great thing about that is that I think it's a perfect example of innovation, right? Innovation doesn't have to be, the latest, greatest technology. It just means solving a problem that no one else has addressed to this point. And as you may know, and many of the women listening to this may know, when you get an epidural, the old school way of still just, with the anesthesiologist feeling up and down your spine to find the spot is still what is out there. And so this wonderful lady who's an engineer by background saw that problem. She said, "Wow, we've got to do better than this." And so she just used basic existing imaging technology to build a very inexpensive device that helps increase the accuracy of the needle insertion amazingly.
Incredible and absolutely, identifying the everyday gaps that we have is definitely a female thing because we're also really busy on multiple levels. So there's always going to be something. I'm identifying them constantly, and so I'm excited to bring you some things as well. But as
Absolutely.
someone who became an influencer after retiring from your first career, how has that experience shaped your approach to evaluating and supporting consumer-facing startups?
Yes, indeed. Well, two real very important things happened out of that. One, I saw that brands were excited to have me, and I'm not even that big of a deal, right? And so as I was fundraising for my fund, I thought, how do we get this model at scale? And that's really why we pioneered what we call the influential investing model. And that is, influencers have the opportunity to invest their dollars in Qurate Capital, but they can also invest their services. And so what that creates is a real win-win-win ecosystem where these influencers are helping to power the brands that we invest in by promoting their products and services. But it also adds value to all of our other investors because you have these really powerful women out there promoting the brands that Qurate invest in. So that was really a cool thing to do, right? Is to recognize and create a model that allows for influencers to not only put their dollars to work, but their services to work to get equity in these amazing companies. On the flip side, that's what I saw when I was investing. What brands need most at the point where I'm investing is usually marketing dollars, right? They're trying to get their product to market and get eyes on it and drive sales. And so what we've created is a model that really hacks that for them. Instead of spending all that cash out the door, with Qurate as an investor, we bring with us this whole roster of incredible women, mostly influencers, who promote those products and services, in exchange for additional equity. And so it's a nice model we've created that we really think allows for everyone to win.
Wonderful. So, speaking of the influencers, tell us more about your investor base or your investor network. Is that primarily females as well? And what does the structure look like?
Yes, as I went out to raise my first fund, I was super nervous. I had never been in a sales or fundraising position before, and it was a very uncomfortable position for me, if I'm being honest, and I didn't know anything about it. And so in my, beginning sort of mindset, I was thinking, well, who do I know, who's sitting on extra cash to invest? And I thought, well, those will be people from my oil and gas days, people that I've known for several decades. And while I went that route and certainly had some success there, the ultimate path for fundraising success for me was with women in general, high net worth women, successful businesswomen in their own right, and then specifically with the subgroup of influencers. And so, what's really cool about that is that, we've got not only the influencers supporting our brand, but these, women who love to buy the products and spread the word about the brands that we invest in. And so I was really proud of what we accomplished with Fund One, kind of by happenstance or accident, if you will. I wish I could say it was some big master plan, and I certainly dreamed of this, but it's unheard of in the venture capital world that we have 80% of our investor base being women.
And I see that you actually overshot your fundraising goal by 50%. So what does that tell you about, I think you touched on this, but what does that tell you about the network, the camaraderie of women, the absolute need that we all see? And when we band together, what you felt and seen just by raising that by 50%, I mean overshooting your fundraising goals by that amount.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I'll say that while the headline looks great, there were a lot of days and weeks and months I didn't know that we were going to meet our goal. It was really at the tail end of that cycle. And what took us over the goal by so much were these influencers and women. And by the way, when we spoke to this group of influencers, I was almost approaching my deadline. So, we just kind of dipped our toes in the water, but we had a 100% yes rate. Every influencer that we spoke to said yes. They personally invested hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million, into our fund. They really put their money where their mouth is, so to speak, and have followed up by providing their services as well. And same thing with the women. I think that was really a testament to how our mission resonated with women. They felt these pain points. They knew some of the brands we were investing in, some of the companies we were supporting, or they just really, liked the mission. And so I think what we created was a compelling case where not only does it do good in the process, but it just makes good business sense, right? Like there's a chance to make extraordinary returns by investing in women.
Awesome. And earlier you touched on some of the main pillars that you look at in identifying, the best companies, women-led companies to invest in. But maybe speak to us a little in more detail what the ideal company looks like, what the ideal business strategy looks like, and what do you really feel in not just in terms of finances, but what other value do you then see? Oh, this is it. I know I can totally bring extensive value to this deal, but also this is an ideal client for us.
Right. Good question. And something that I didn't appreciate before getting into this world is that every venture capital fund has a very specific thesis, both in terms of what types of companies they invest in, what stage of companies, what their check size is, and all of that. And so there's a lot of strategy that goes into that. And so for us at Qurate Capital, as I mentioned, we primarily invest in CPG brands. And within that CPG umbrella, we're looking at four key categories for our next fund. That'll be health and beauty, food and beverage, home and family, and fashion and apparel. And really, anything that the woman is going to use every day in her day-to-day life. Those are the sorts of investments that we're looking for. Stage-wise, when we come in, it's kind of called late seed or early A. And so they usually have product market fit, they've got some sort of revenue traction, and we're coming in as accelerant on the fire, so to speak. We're there to speed up that growth process. And so what we've spent a lot of time and resources doing is building out our own ecosystem of vetted, trusted resources. So not only are we investing capital, not only are we bringing the influencers to the table, but we've got people that can help with supply chain management, demand planning, sourcing, all sorts of those behind the scenes functions that really make or break a company like this.
Yeah, excellent. I was just going to, lead into where do you see your most need, or the, you where do you see you filling the biggest need in general, right? So, as you mentioned, you've got supply chain, you've got distribution, you've got marketing, which I imagine could also, be quite a substantial, a bit of finances to inject there. But where do you see, based on experience, you've been filling the most need, where that's concerned?
Great question. I think our expertise traditionally and going forward will continue to be on the influencer marketing side, the go-to-market strategy, but we have really built out resources in all those other areas as well. You know, outside of my expertise, even we've brought in other team members who are really good operators to help on that. And I'd say also, though, as we're evaluating companies, as much as I love good branding and packaging and you know, content creation and all that, that's not enough for a brand. We're really looking for companies that are building themselves thoughtfully from the inside out, really taking control of their supply chain and really, you know, owning their business, so to speak. You know, if you just slap a pretty logo and good packaging around, say, a product that you're just using co-packers for, you're just you know, really leveraging other resources, but you're not really owning any of that yourself. That's something that can be knocked off easily, replicated, and really you're not in the driver's seat with brands like that. So we're looking for women who are thoughtfully building out something, you know, of intrinsic value beyond just the marketing and branding and, you know, external things that we love to see and we love to help with, but we're looking for those underpinnings that are really going to give it a chance for long term success in the business space.
Awesome. So not so much the affiliate side of businesses, right? You're looking for substance and
That's right.
fundamental. Awesome. Very informative. Thank you. Now you're a mom, you have two young children, you're a wife, you're a businesswoman. Please speak to us. So many women out there are, you know, living the same lives or at least striving to
Yeah.
you know, juggle all these balls. How do you manage your time, give enough to every aspect of your life? And yeah, how do you manage it? How do you balance it?
Yeah, I think that's just such an important question. A little background on me is that, you know, when I had that 20-year career in the corporate world, I worked a lot of hours, late nights, early morning, a lot of travel. But I didn't have kids until later in life. I had my kids when I was already doing Curate Capital and doing my own business thing. And I look back and I think it would have been extraordinarily challenging to have kids when I was in that corporate environment because it was very old school. You know, you had to be at your desk in the office downtown Houston, we're on a plane traveling somewhere. And so that would have been extra difficult, right? And so, as much as I work more than ever now, I at least somewhat own my own schedule, right? And so, I'm very clear with setting up my calendar and, you know, I'll mark off times, you know, for kids' activities at school. I do school drop off every day. I don't do pickup, but I do drop off every day. And so, I think the key for me has been being intentional with, you know, calendar, putting on my calendar the things that are important, whether it's personal, you know, taking care of myself or taking care of the kids or doing, you know, date night with my husband or whatever that is, just being intentional about it and knowing that I can't just, you know, kind of loaf around all day and then just work late because I have a hard cutoff in the evening when I have to go home and be with my children. So it makes me more focused during the day, knowing that I don't have that luxury that I used to do of working late or whatever, you know, I wanted to do. So we just have very strict boundaries in terms of, you know, this is, you know, when I work, these are the hours I've carved out to do kid things or family things. And then another complicating factor that we have is that my husband works with me on Curate Capital. He handles a lot of the behind the scenes things that you know, are outside of my wheelhouse or my capacity. And so I got to give him a lot of credit for being very supportive and jumping all in when I had this crazy idea 5 or so years ago. But he would really want to talk about things at night. It would be talking business. And I finally just had to say, let's not do that. Once we're home with the kids, let's put a stop to that because otherwise it was getting me ramped up and I really, you know, already have a hard enough time falling asleep. And so it'd get my mind going again. And so I had to be intentional about having that time to cut it off with the business talk and allow my mind to, you know, somewhat calm down, be present with the kids and the family, and then we can pick it up the next morning again.
Excellent. So it sounds like a lot of discipline needs to be instilled there, just, you know, in terms of boundaries, as you mentioned. And I can totally empathize because I've started with something with my fiance as well. And, you know, we're new and fresh in our relationship, but really excited about our future. And so it's really nice hearing from, you know, people in the similar position and how you go about managing that. Because I do feel like if you stick and your business partners and that just becomes your everyday conversation, you really could lose some of the the romantic moments or the moments that are separate to just business, which can be a little more analytical, logical, and let's think of the next steps, right?
Absolutely. We love our business and we're all in on it. But between talking about that all the time and talking about kids all the time, you forget and kind of lose that personal connection. So, yeah, I think it helps to carve out some time where certain things are off limits so you can just focus on, being a partner, and, exploring kind of what brought you together in the first place.
So with your background in both traditional and new economy industries, how do you see the landscape evolving for women entrepreneurs in sectors that have historically been male dominated, particularly because that's a big part of your background?
Absolutely. I think my whole life and career have been in male-dominated roles and industries, whether that be oil and gas, petroleum engineering, finance, venture capital. It's been a common thread throughout my life. And I think early on in my career, I really tried to fit in. I would wear, the navy and black and brown conservative business suits and really try to look and sound like my male colleagues because I thought that's what it took to get a seat at the table. But really, the turning point for me was when I just embraced who I am as a woman, as a business person, and brought my own unique perspective to the table. And, I'll anecdotally share that, as you maybe can see from today, or if you've looked at our website, I like colorful things. I like have a very kind of out there colorful style. And recently I joined the board of a bank that's based here in Houston and multi-billion dollar bank and they're expanding in the Texas market. And so they created this advisory board and I was so excited, but I looked at the roster and as a lot of, older white men and a few women, but I thought, okay, this is a bank. I've got to be very serious. And so I showed it to my first board meeting in a, for me, pretty neutral outfit. It was like I think a leopard print dress with a navy blazer and, very kind of buttoned up compared to my usual outfits. And when I got there, I was greeted by all these men who said, "Carrie, we looked at your website. We looked at your bio. I wore color today for you." They might have on a purple jacket or a pink shirt. They said, "I expected you to show up in a rainbow dress. What is this neutral?" And so it was really a moment for me to realize that, people value you for what you bring to the table that's different. That's where your value lies. And I thought I had learned that lesson, but this was within the past year even. But I thought it was a very explicit example of, you need to bring your perspective, whether that's your style or your, intellectual viewpoint, your strategy for this business, whatever your unique viewpoint is, you need to bring that to the table because they don't need an echo chamber. They don't need more of the same. They need your valuable perspective, your unique perspective, particularly in what we're doing now. If we're working on some, fashion brand or beauty brand, I mean, I oftentimes am that customer. And so it's important for me to speak up and say what I wish, existed. It's up to us to create those things. And so that's one little anecdote. But I would say in general, I think I'm seeing more and more communities to support women in business. Women entrepreneurs are emerging. And so I really encourage women to find your tribe, so to speak, because, there's no reason that we have to do this alone. We may not, make up the majority in some rooms that we walk in, but there are certainly other people doing things in venture or doing things in finance or whatever world you're in. Find people that are relevant to what you're doing and really lean into that support. Because what I found is that, when women come together in groups like that, it's really not just support on the professional side, but it's on these topics we've talked about how to navigate, male-dominated worlds, how to navigate being a mom and a businesswoman. You really get support for every facet of your life, not just on the professional side. So I think it's so important to find that community that you can lean into as you build your business.
Yeah, very profound. And there's a few things that stand out for me from what you've said. It's the one is that you initially thought you'd need to go with the navy suit and the typical male dominated look and feel for the finance world or the business professional world. And I think that, thank goodness, is passing it because of women like you, because of people being authentic, women being authentic in their space. And now there's an example of what it can be, because that was the only example we had, right? Because it was so male dominated.
Absolutely.
And so that's one thing that I'm excited about, is that we are changing the narrative. We're making it more us, because we can do the role. We don't have to do it looking and saying the same things. And then the other thing, what was really profound is absolutely the community. It's so much easier, and women are by default networkers, collaborative and nurturers, and I think we find a lot of support by just being together and talking things through, which is another thing we love doing. So thank you. It's awesome and really inspiring to hear how you go. And I wore my purple sweater for you today. I
I
was so excited
noticed.
to bring color. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Very on brand for me. Thank you for that.
Of course. Looking ahead, let's discuss some of the trends and opportunities in women-led businesses that are exciting you the most and that you're looking forward to, and then how Qurate Capital will position itself to capitalize on those.
Yes, certainly. I think we could kind of go sector by sector. I won't bore you with all my thoughts, but on a high level, I think in the fashion space, we're excited about the sustainability focus that we are seeing more and more. So I think consumers are demanding it and brands are responding, thankfully. I'm seeing a move away from, these fast fashion brands that are so detrimental in so many ways, and a more thoughtful approach to developing fashion brands. We're investing in one called Another Tomorrow, which is like a luxury sustainable brand. And they are really doing some thoughtful things in regards to developing their supply chain in a sustainable manner, eliminating as much waste as possible, and developing a circular economy for garments. And so really some thoughtful work being done there at Another Tomorrow, but in the fashion space in general. So that's good. And then on the health and beauty and wellness side, we're certainly into the trend of cleaner ingredients, a lot of personalization going on in that space. We're in one brand called Live Tinted that caters to all skin tones. The founder was a beauty influencer herself of South Asian descent, and so was really struggling to find makeup products that worked for her skin. And so she's just really built an incredible company that has, gosh, grown maybe 10x over where we were when we first invested 3 years ago only. So really doing incredible things. I think she's right on trend with this demand for these inclusive beauty products that cater to all skin tones, skin types. And so that's another trend that we're monitoring. And again, I think just in general, we're looking for those companies that are really building from the inside out, where it's something valuable that's going to be acquirable. Because in my world, the whole name of the game is to invest in these companies and help them grow bigger, faster, so that they can ultimately be bought by private equity, by a strategic corporate acquirer, or maybe IPO. But that's the only time we make our money, right? Until then, they're reinvesting all their profits to grow even bigger, faster. And so we're looking for companies that have what it takes to be attractive down the road to a potential acquirer. So that takes owning your supply chain and your knowing your business inside and out and building it in a really thoughtful, sustainable way that's going to survive the ups and downs that we all know happen in business.
Wonderful. Just to close off the interval, tell us some key takeaways for this, but then also some advice that you want to leave to aspiring entrepreneurs or potentially your next investment company.
I think as I was raising our first fund, it became kind of a secondary mission of mine to break down barriers to understanding investing, particularly in venture capital for women. Because what I found was when we just talk about entrepreneurship or investing in normal, everyday terms, that really empowers people to understand it and perhaps participate, whether that's starting a company themselves, going to work for a startup, or investing in venture capital. The more knowledge that we can give to people, the more they can act on that knowledge, right? And so, like I said, that just became kind of a passion of mine in the process because so many women are brilliant, have great ideas, or want to participate, but they've been kind of kept out by some of the lingo and jargon that people use when they talk about, startups or about venture capital. And so, as the old saying goes, knowledge is power. And I think a certain demographic has maybe benefited from reserving the knowledge for themselves. And so we really like to just break down those barriers to understanding. And then people can decide if they want to participate in investing, if they want to, start a company, all those things. And so, yeah, if you're interested in learning more about venture capital or about investing or are looking for funding for your startup, feel free to check us out on social media. It's just at curate.capital or go to our website, which is the same at curate.capital.
Excellent. Kerry Colbert, thank you so much. Please continue on the mission supporting women, their women-owned businesses, and we look forward to hearing more from you in the near future. This is the Harvest Podcast, and you're listening to Carmel Fisher. Stay tuned for more. Brought to you, as always, by the Harvest Podcast, available anywhere you listen to podcasts.